Hey everyone, I've got some exciting news. I have a few food pop-ups coming through March and April I'm excited to announce. On Tuesday, the 21st of March, I've got a 12-seater 7-course happening in Surry Hills with only 2 tickets left at 6 p.m. On Sunday, the 26th of March, Nina Huynh and I are doing a bar takeover at Dean's Lounge in Potts Point, slinging out delicious bar food alongside cocktails. And for my Melbourne people, I'll be down on Monday, the 10th of April, banging out flavour-packed a la carte dishes with Neo cocktails at Par Bar in Brunswick Street. Tickets are up and available for all the events. Go and follow roots_dining on Instagram for all the links to book your seats. See you there. Let's get back to the show. My name's Elijah and welcome to the Roots Hospitality Podcast.
Yes, chef! Yeah.
Welcome to episode 61 with Jason Lucas.
As what you just said to someone listening to your podcast, I had a really funny experience on Tuesday night. I was at Iceberg's just having a drink on Valentine's Day with my wife and my daughter.
Yeah.
And Alex sat with us, Alex Pritchard, chef. And he said, oh, if you don't mind, there's a couple of guests that know you're here and they want to meet you. And I said, why? He said, oh, they've been following you. I'm like, oh, that's so weird. I just sat with them and had a drink. It was really strange. And my daughter was like, why? And I was like, oh, your dad's like sort of like semi-famous in these areas. I'm like, God.
God,
I just was so awkward. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Like, you'll say, why did you listen to it? It's funny.
Yeah, I've never had someone bombard my dinner, to be completely fair, or drink to make a point or to come and chat with me. But I don't know. There's probably some perks to that that it's more or less probably the same thing. Like, I'm sure that's happened before. You've had strangers come up and want to see you
say hi.
I'll be like, you know, I'm a huge fan of what you do.
Yeah.
You know,
but like, generally it's industry.
It is.
But not like chefs or waiters or, you know, people know of me in industry now, but it was funny that it was just a couple of guests.
Just strange.
It's so funny.
It's really strange. Like, the people really surprise you.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one thing is that you, in your head, because I created this for industry, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't for customers because I don't think that would understand
mm-hmm.
what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But it can always surprise you with just who decides to tune in, you know? Like, it's crazy. Like, even as a chef, the one of the reasons I really enjoyed getting photographers on is because you're basically are the ones being the gap between the restaurant and
showing what you do
and social media, or whatever it is, or the marketing side of it. You know?
Yeah.
So obviously on our side, we're going to be seeing who's taking those shots and vice versa. So it could be the whole range of people who are handling a lot of the restaurants. So seeing that is good for us because not only are we passionate about what we do, we see that you guys are also kind of helping highlight us or boost us up in what we do, you know what I mean? So it's like there's always this relationship. So I just, it's interesting. But at the same time, I always wondered with photographers when it comes to restaurants or bars, whatever specifically, what is it about photography with restaurants and bars that you find so appealing or interesting, I guess, in that sense?
What do I love about doing that?
Yeah, restaurants specifically, yeah.
I think it can probably go way back to the fact that I've always grown up in a family. My family are Greek Cypriot, and we've always grown food, cooked food. I've always been around a kitchen. I remember helping my grandfather with his wood oven when I was like 6 or 7. So that theatre of cooking for people and entertaining people has been something that has always been in my family. My grandma was an amazing cook. My mum's an amazing cook. My sister's an amazing cook. She was the editor of Gourmet Traveller for 15 years.
Wow.
So last week I was in Melbourne shooting and we had dinner and I hadn't seen my mum and my sister for a while. And my mum basically said, do you think we could talk about something other than restaurants? And I said, no, not really. No, I haven't seen Anne for a while and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So I think it's part of that. And then I think I started as a fashion photographer at 22, right? Based in Melbourne, got some really big breaks early on, was shooting for Harper's Bazaar, Vogue, straight away.
Wow.
and it got tired really quickly. That reliance on a massive crew of people, hair and makeup artists, stylists, models. So I found myself virtually on every shoot that I did, basically not shooting anything till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon because there was so much mucking around. So I got really bored of it really quickly and decided that I would head towards the world of lifestyle that was evolving there, which included interiors, you know, like a little bit of food, people doing stuff within, you know, say cooking, you know, cooking a barbecue and you'd shoot that, so to speak, outside like a picnic or something. So I got into that and I really liked that. And then from that, it evolved into food photography and somehow, you know, just started shooting more restaurants.
Yeah.
And there was something about that, and you'll probably totally understand what I'm about to say. There's something about the theatre of the kitchen that is really interesting. It's a dance. It's stressful. There's a rhythm to it. And I really loved observing that. And as things went on, I obviously started working with better chefs at better restaurants. And it was almost like, to me, I sort of went, this is a little bit like, you know, if you make it into the Australian test team, you know, you're in the club. You know, you're in the cricket team and you're in the club and there's that click.
Yeah.
And obviously, in 2014, I got approached by Tourism Australia to follow, was given a budget and said, oh, can you follow this restaurant from Copenhagen around Australia? They're setting up a pop-up.
Wow.
So Noma came to town and basically travelled around Australia with Noma before they opened and then shot everything with them while they were here. And that opened up, as you can imagine, you know, an incredible level of connection globally to the high-end restaurant game.
Yeah.
And from that point on, I'd have to say I've been like just running constantly, busy. And, you know, I got on really well with everyone at Noma, shot some incredible stuff. And then from there, you know, Renee said to me, oh, we're doing a thing in Mexico. We'd like you to come. I was like, sure, I'm pretty free. So off I went to Noma, Mexico a couple of weeks before they opened, shot the global library for them then.
Wow.
Of, you know, because they were setting up in Tulum. So it was very hard for them to get people to send media to take photos. Noma didn't want to have some person who didn't know how to take food photos represent their shots. So they basically asked me to create a photo library that would be accessible to media that they would choose and had to cover off everything, like had to cover off the food, had to cover off the restaurant, the drinks, the chefs working, the portraits. So I spent 2 weeks doing that. And it was sort of my first experience of, I think, a restaurant really controlling their messaging.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was also because media couldn't get there. It was expensive. So, you know, that was really interesting opportunity to see, you know, this amazing pop-up, you know, best restaurant in the world, doing what I consider to be probably the defining moment. Their point where they're at their strongest was, in my opinion, Noma, Mexico. And I had a front seat to all of that. And to see all my work all over the world, New York Times, you know, LA Times, everywhere in London, it was really exciting. And then they asked me to come back, near the end to archive pretty much everything, because that's what I did in Australia as well. Because there's so many dishes that don't get on the menu in a restaurant like Noma, but they wanted to archive everything. So it was really, really cool. And then obviously the next step for them was to plan to open Copenhagen.
Mm.
So at the time, because I was doing so much for them, including shooting movies for them, and, you know, just me, my little tripod, my little bag, and off I went. And Renee asked me to go and photograph the research trips for the new restaurant, which included Iceland, Greenland, Faroe Islands, you know, insane.
Gorgeous.
So I did that, and then I did the opening for, you know, probably the most anticipated restaurant opening in the last 20, 30 years, Noma 2.0.
Yeah.
You know, so from that, you know, a little bit of luck plays its part, but then you have to do your part and produce really beautiful work. And then from that point on, I was really blessed that within that NOMA alumni, I became really, really close friends with Thomas Friebel, who people might know as, you know, pretty much Renee's number two guy. You know, there's Renee and there's Thomas, and that's NOMA. Thomas went off and had an opportunity to open a restaurant in Japan called Inoue, which was incredible. So from that point on, I was traveling to Japan, you know, 3-4 times a year for about 2-3 years, shooting with Thomas, maybe even more. And, you know, we did the most incredible things. And sometimes when I'm at an airport or I'm on a trip with Thomas, who is like a superhero, he is nonstop 20 hours a day, and I'm tired and I'm exhausted and I'm like missing home, I sort of have to just go, you know what, this is a pretty good life, pretty lucky that I'm working with the best chefs in the world, getting paid for it, and I'm on a tiny little island off the coast of Japan where they're collecting seaweed and it's sunset. And then when sunset's over, we're playing soccer with the local kids. You know, it's like...
pretty romantic.
Pretty amazing life. So, you know, I wouldn't have ever imagined 20 years ago that, you know, getting into photography was what I always wanted to do as a 13-year-old. At 13, I was like, I'm going to be a photographer. You know, steal mum's camera, go and take photos, do all that sort of stuff. So to imagine that, you know, I've got the life I have now, like my professional life,
yeah,
is pretty fantastic, and I'm really happy about it. I'm really blessed. And from that one, you know, phone call from Tourism Australia saying, hey, can you do this? This world has opened up to a lot of things. Like, you know, we've got, you know, Hugh Allen at Vue du Monde, who's a great mate as well, doing amazing work with him. He's doing amazing stuff. So excited to get his call, come down and shoot with me. You know, so stuff like that. I've got Ben Ng, ex-head chef of NOMA over in WA. You know, I talk to him all the time. I haven't had the chance to go and shoot with him yet, but that's, you know. So all these networks open up with all these guys that I met at NOMA that are now across the world doing amazing things.
Yeah.
So it's really cool.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a few things I wanted to touch on. When you started bringing up working in the fashion industry, right? I don't know. I would assume it's obviously the tougher side of photography because of the demand. I could be wrong. But it'd be good to get your experience on that, because the way that I assess the pressure of being a photographer in that kind of industry is like any chef working at these 3 Michelin high volume, very military style kitchens, like per se, right? Where you can have a broad range of people's experiences, both good and bad, that teach them a lot of lessons and teach them a lot of skills, but also they walk away with that going, that was pretty intense. I learned a ton, but I think I know where I'm going to go. Like, that's generally the experience of that industry. I'd like to tap into that for you, because much like chefs who've worked in those kind of kitchens, how was that for you, and what do you feel like you learned from it, even from the good and the bad?
I think the difference between working in a kitchen and what I do is, in a kitchen you are absolutely definitely part of a team, whereas with me it's me,
right?
And I have to deal with that sort of scenario on my own internally. I have to be respectful of what's going on around me. I can't get in the way. And the one thing that I have always tried to do is be super quick. You know, as much as, you know, chefs love the limelight and love what I do for them in terms of portraying them in a, we'll call it a heroic way, I understand they don't want to be in front of my camera.
Yeah.
I understand most people don't want to be in front of a camera.
Yeah.
So if I can do a portrait, say, of a chef in 1 minute, and that's not unlikely for me, and take 10, 15 shots because I know exactly what I want, great. They love that.
Yeah, in and out.
In and out, done. And I think a lot of what I do in dealing with pressure within that situation, because, you know, you only got one shot at certain things, I think it comes down to a few things. It comes down to, firstly, understanding what you're doing. I've been at the industry, for 25 years.
Yep.
And I would say in the last 10 years, I understood that I was pretty good at what I was doing. And the fact that you don't have to worry about the technical side of what you're doing, and all you're thinking about is creative, and all you're doing is also anticipating, because a big part of it is anticipating what's about to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real skill.
Yeah.
And I sort of take that back to as a young man, as a 14, 15, 16 year old, I got myself in a position where I was doing elite sport.
Wow.
And I sort of feel that a lot of that discipline and a lot of that pressure situation is used in my day-to-day work. And it's not that I find myself in a pressure situation very often. Very rarely am I nervous going to work anymore, occasionally. And when I am, I'm excited about that. Like, it's really exciting, you know, and it might be a new, you know. Generally, it's an overseas trip where I have to go overseas, right. and your surroundings are totally different.
Sure.
And it's just that first few hours, and, you know, shooting overseas is very, very different to shooting in Australia, especially in the States. Not that there isn't a respect for what I do here, but in the States, there's this level that of respect for the photographer on set that he's like, a story I'll tell you, like, a few years back, I was doing a lot of photography in New York, maybe 2015, 16 or something like that. I'd be flown over to New York to shoot advertising jobs.
Sure.
So I might get flown over to, for instance, photograph a couple of plates of salad.
Right.
My dad could never understand. He would be like, why are you flying to New York to photograph some salads? I was like, well, DDB are paying me a lot of money and I'm really happy to go. So anyway, I'm on this set and there's this stylist, table full of lettuce leaves. And she says to me, I'm laying out all these cost lettuce leaves. I'd really like to get your opinion on, like, you know, the best three or four. And I'm like, they all look pretty green to me. How about those three? No problem. So I go and sit down. I sit down next to what I think is almost like an intern. She's like a 19 year old young lady. And I start talking to her. Hey, how you going? What's your name? Da, 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 da. What are you doing here? And she looks at me, but she doesn't talk.
Yeah.
And I go, sorry, have I, you know, offended you? I'm really sorry. I just wanted to say hi and, you know, I saw you there. And she said, oh, no, you're the photographer. Like, you know, and photographers never talk to me. I was like, what are you talking about? She goes, well, you know, there's sort of a hierarchy and I'm an intern. And I was like, well, that's just ridiculous, isn't it? And so, you know, she explained to me, like, on set, because there's like 30 people on set.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are all these people do? Like, in Australia, if you're doing an advertising shoot, there's you, there's your assistant, there's a stylist.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of clients maybe, and that's it. There's 5-6 people over there. It's like multiplied.
Yeah.
And that's why everything costs so much. So it's just like, not that it's, you know, not that I like that or anything, but it's just, it's funny that, like, in Japan or in Europe or in the US, like, what we do is, I don't know, is it valued more? I don't think it's valued more. It's just different.
Yeah.
And it's really great for a moment, but you sort of get really sick of it really quickly.
Yeah.
You want to get back to set in Australia and swear and just relax.
Everyone just be mates.
So yeah. It's funny. It's just, there's a different way of doing things.
Yeah.
And like in the States, it's bigger. Is it better? Probably not.
I do find that interesting because even just with chefs as well, like, I love to talk about the style or the atmosphere of the kitchens in which they prefer to, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, even I was talking to Jason Saxby or whatever, you know, and talking about how he's worked at Per Se in the Ledbury in London.
Yep.
And then also just coming back to Australia.
Yep.
And he's talked about how he's like, you know, like, sure, what they're doing there is incredible, but the atmosphere in which you work should be more fun. Like, you do really, everyone really loves what they do.
Yeah.
So to suppress that just kind of devalues your whole experience doing it.
Yeah.
So for him, he's like, you know, like, I want to be able to catch up with the chefs, or I want to, while we're cooking and prepping, I want to be able to talk shit about what's going on and know that the quality of what we're doing is still high.
Yeah.
But us doing it as a team, we can get along and have a good time doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and that's a huge difference.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's really interesting you saying that, because my experience of, you know, working with, say, Jared at Hearts Yard, who's now gone on to do a new project soon, you know, his kitchen's tiny and they've got a little wood oven and they're all mates. And the stuff they produce is outstanding. And it's a set menu that's like $90.
Yeah.
You know, like that scenario for me is like, that's so awesome. And then, you know, you, on the other end of the scale in Australia, I'd say Vue du Monde is like, to me, probably the best dining experience in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you've got, say, 20 chefs doing, you know, I'm not going to call it Nomaresque because Hugh has his own way.
Yeah.
But it's in a style of creating that. And they do it in a different way, but they're amazing as well. And on another experience, I've just spent last week shooting at the Ritz-Carlton in Melbourne, which is a hotel restaurant, which, you know, is another different level. There's a lot of money involved and, you know, they're just in development stage. They're opening in 4 weeks. And then you have someone like Mark Best, who's overseeing that as the executive. He's not even the executive chef. I don't know what his title is, but he sits above the head chef as a mentor.
Right.
And I found that to be a really amazing experience last week because I'm an old friend with Mark. We're really old mates and he recommended me for this job and you know, I just basically hung out there for 3 days and took some photos, did some food shots and shot some restaurant stuff. And so they got a whole different experience. You know, got what I'll call a legend of our industry, you know, trying to guide some younger chefs and very talented younger chefs to create this incredible restaurant. So another different experience, you know. And then this week, you know, I'm shooting with one of my dearest oldest mates, James Viles, who's at a hotel as well, the Park Hyatt.
Yeah.
But he's at a conservative hotel doing what he does, which is a little bit out there. So, like there's always these different experiences. And one of my regular clients is Crown Sydney. Shoot a lot of their restaurant stuff. I was there yesterday. So, you know, like there's all these contrast between Jared at Hart's Yard, where he's got his wood oven hanging out with his mates producing the most amazing food, to James Viles looking over the Opera House, to Mark Best and the guys at Ritz-Carlton Melbourne on the 80th floor, to Hugh. You know, like there's no right or wrong, and it's all different. And it's just like, which way does it work? Well, it works whichever way you want it to.
Yeah, and you want to keep it on your toes, you know? Like, there's nothing better than just kind of having something different. It's like a regularly changing menu. You don't want to just be sitting doing the same shit all the time.
Absolutely.
Like, it's fine for, like, a couple of weeks. After that, you need something else. You've got that itch to scratch, whether it's a new experience, something like a new environment to work with, like going overseas. You know, like, that's when things keep getting interesting and it keeps you passionate about what you want to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, seeing new things and experiencing new things.
Yeah.
You know, even just, you know, walking down the street and there's a different smell.
Yeah.
You know, like, like that's a weird thing. Like, that's like, I was walking somewhere the other day and I'm like, oh, it smells like New York in winter. I was like,
it's so strange.
Yeah, like that smell thing is really, really cool. It reminds you of when you were 10 and, you know, the jasmine was blooming in your old front yard or something. It's weird. But having that new, you know, that's one of the reasons I enjoy traveling overseas, look at new things. And I come back energized. I come back excited about, you know, the day-to-day here. You know, and my day-to-day is pretty bloody good.
Mm.
I've got amazing clients and I pretty much now been, most of my clients just allow me to do what I do, which is really exciting. They book me for me and for what I do. And generally there isn't a great deal of intervention and a lot of my clients are direct.
Mm.
I don't have an intermediary. I don't have I very rarely work for an ad agency. Sometimes work for design studios. And I find that process quite frustrating because like with everything, you produce something. So the other thing that I do a lot of is I direct and shoot a lot of short movies for clients. So, you know, my first edit, I've got an amazing collaborator in Danny Tate, who is regarded as one of the best commercial editors in Australia. He's basically given all that away and just works on his own stuff and edits for me. And we shoot together a lot. And basically, I give him a bunch of footage and I go, Danny, you know what I want. And I don't even say that. I just go, here's some stuff. And he comes back with this most incredible edit virtually every time, first time.
Yeah.
And you send it off to a client and they go, oh, can you change, you know, this, this, this and this. I ring Danny and I go, hi. I thought it was perfect. You know that.
But yeah.
Let's make it shit now. He's like, okay, what do we need to do? Take this out. And it makes no sense. Yeah, cool. And we're just at the point now, we're going, no worries, we'll keep the first edit for our folios.
Yeah,
let's water this process down where the client's happy and it looks like shit.
Yeah.
So that part of it's frustrating. But, you know, in most ways, when I'm doing stills, this is what I do. This is what I think's good. And the other thing, because of the experience I've had over the years and the people that I've met and the work I've done, chefs, clients, restaurant owners value my opinion, which is really cool. So I have chef mates that might go, hey, I'm working on some new dishes. Can you come down and we can plate it together, or, you know, kind of send you some pics because you know what looks good. I'm like, yeah, cool. But realize that might look good in a photo. It might not be the best way for you to plate it. So let's do it both ways.
Right.
So quite often when I'm working with new restaurants, you know, if it's a chef I know, you know, we collaborate on that. That's really cool. Like, never thought that I would have input to a chef's dish on a visual level, because, you know, I've got some level of kudos now, which is sort of strange as well.
Yeah, I hear you're a part-time dishwasher at Icebergs too.
I've been begging to go and do a Saturday night service. So one of my dear friends now in the industry is Alex Pritchard. We've had the pleasure of working together for now, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, whatever it is. We shot the Icebergs book together, and he's become a great mate. And I really just want to do some shifts, because I one of my jobs as a kid, as a 16, 17 year old, was washing dishes in a restaurant and kitchen hand and all that sort of stuff, and a waiter. I think everybody should be a waiter at some point. I was there on Tuesday night, as I mentioned before, and I was there with my daughter, and Alex is sitting there going, okay, so Mila, my daughter's name's Mila. Mila, what? Which part of the restaurant do you work in? And she's like, what? I said, and I've been talking to Alex, like, you know, Mila needs a job. I'm just trying to, you know, I want to do work. And Alex's like, I said, well, she probably really wants your job, mate. She wants to start at the top and work her way down. You know how 18-year-old girls are.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so Alex calls over the lady at reception and says, oh, can you explain to Mila your job? And it's like, no. And I said, how about Morris's PA? And we're like, nah, it's not going to work at all. And so we've decided that Mila is going to do some trials at the bar a waitress.
That's sick.
So that's really cool.
Yeah.
So we might be both working next Saturday on a shift together. I'll be washing dishes, or maybe just standing at the pass talking to Alex.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I said to Alex, you should teach me how to do, you know, teach me how to be the dish pig.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because you might get in the shit one night and you might not have anyone, and you just call me up and I come.
I love that shit.
But yeah. Like, you know, like the guys at Iceberg now, all the sous chefs, all the head chefs, they're all mates. So I would love to chuck on an apron and experience that part of the industry.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Also, Daryl at Bizarre is always mentioning on Instagram
that
we're short of a dishwasher on a Saturday night. And I'm tempted to call him too and go, I'm coming down. And everyone's going to say, yo, you can't do that. I'm like, why not? I don't want to get paid. I just want to enjoy that experience.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I just, you know, I love the theatre of the restaurant industry.
Yeah.
And where the action is the kitchen.
It's a buzz.
So, you know, to understand that and see it firsthand without a camera in my hand, I think would be really valuable.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd love to do it. But, you know, I might go in and wash some dishes and take some photos at the same time.
Alex wanted to say, he wanted to bring up something, and he said he wasn't sure whether you'd want to talk about it, but you mentioned a dry ice and a seafood platter.
Oh, yeah. So it's become a bit of a thing with my... my daughter's got the taste for the new Icebergs. So we pop along and, you know, we have this privileged position where we know people at restaurants. And, you know, I pop along with Alex and, you know, at Icebergs, and he sits down and he goes, what do you want to eat? I said, oh, whatever, whatever. You know, send out a few oysters and this and that and the other, and out comes this massive seafood platter. And I'm there with Mila, my wife again, Steph, and her friend Talia. And this amazing seafood platter, if you know, it's this huge silver platter full of the most amazing stuff, fully iced. And to keep it cold, they put the dry ice underneath.
Right.
You know, so the edge of the silver platter is, you know, frosting over like a, you know, like a pole in the snow.
Yeah, yeah.
So Mila's friend Talia, as this happened in like, it was like slow motion, and thank God Alex was sitting next to us, she decides to lick the platter. And we're like, I'm like, oh shit. So her tongue is attached to the iceberg.
Oh, she did it. She actually got a tongue.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah. So oh my she's God. Stuck to this mega $350 iceberg platter and trying to pull it off. And Alex said, no, don't do that. So Alex, thank God, is there, gets a glass of water, pours it on her tongue, releases it, blood pissing everywhere.
Holy shit.
And, waitresses running everywhere with napkins. It was like, well, Miller, next time your friends come, can we have someone that's got a slightly higher IQ, please? So Alex was like, wow, I've never seen that before. And I said, well, hopefully you won't see it again. So, yeah. Speak, beware of the iceberg seafood platter.
Yeah, don't go looking that seafood.
Just hilarious. And it happened in slow motion. I saw her start to do it. I'm like, you're not.
Oh, yeah, she did. Yeah.
She did. So lucky you didn't. Yeah, anyway.
Jesus.
Yeah.
He also brought up another time about you guys must have been doing a shoot by the water, and he was wearing flip flops and thongs and had a bit of a tumble and fall, and he said you had to shoot one side of him like the entire time.
Yeah. Such a bad leg. So we're shooting at sunrise for East 33 Oysters, and Alex was helping us on that project. And I wanted to do a really cool intro shot of him collecting seagrass on the rocks outside icebergs, you know, like cool intro shot. And Alex wearing inappropriate footwear, as all chefs seem to do. I don't know what that is. And went arse over. Like, it could have been really bad. He saved himself by bracing himself with his arm.
Yeah.
Scraped his whole arm up. You know, scraped his whole ass up. And, you know, but hardcore chefs that they are. Yeah, sweet as
out of their clogs, straight into their flip-flops. Oh, mate. For everywhere.
So, you know, like, he carried on and we shot for the rest of the day and he probably went to hospital afterwards.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, so, you know, work safety didn't really get a look in that day.
Yeah, I mean,
doing some great stuff with Alex. We've been working on some stuff down at Dovecot too. He's been doing some pop-ups there.
Yeah.
Down in Gerringong. So that's been great. It's been great just, you know, I sort of go through, you know, you sort of gravitate to, in my experience, I gravitate to one or two chefs at a time that, you know, you find a real strong collaboration with. Mm. And the other thing that's interesting, you know, I'm talking about Alex at Icebergs, but also, you know, Maurice Tozzini, legend of our industry, and one of my favorite restaurateurs. I've known him for probably 20, 25 years as well. Like I grew up in Melbourne, moved to Sydney in 1999, and back in those, when I was in my early 20s, everyone used to hang out at the George Wine Room, which is like legendary. And that's where he was, and, you know, I was this young, you know, 20-year-old, like young photographer, and there's the angry Maurice Tozzini in the corner, was looking like he wanted to punch someone. So I got to know him there, and then, you know, he opened Otto here, and then our paths sort of, you know, have really crossed over the last 10 years, and he's just an amazing individual. And what he's done for Sydney dining, I think, is exceptional. And now with the, you know, the Icebergs, you know, renovation and the works that Alex doing and the whole team there is just incredible. And it's probably one of my, I haven't eaten in the dining room yet. We always gravitate to the bar. I love that casual way of dining. Whereas, you know, Alex and Maurice are like, you got to come to the dining room. It's like, don't really want to. I do, but
we love the bar.
We love Maddie and Lenny at the bar. You know, and Anna's there as well. And Anna's been, you know, with Maurice on and off for 22, 23 years as well.
Yeah.
So amazing crew, you know, amazing crew. And I try to work with them whenever I can because I love their love of art, their love of the industry, their love of the whole process of service. So. Yeah. And I'm lucky to call myself a collaborator. And you know, as you know, I was lucky enough to shoot all the food for the Icebergs 20-year book, which was really, really exciting for me. I don't shoot a lot of books anymore because it's a real labor of love. But, you know, I would not miss the opportunity to work with the guys on this project. And, you know, Alex and I sort of pained over shots for, you know, must have been 7, 8, 9 days while they were closed. So it was... maybe were they closed? They were just about to close. So, you know, it was one of those last minute things. I had to clear my schedule.
Wow.
Because I got a call from Julie Gibbs one Friday night. I was in a Qantas club somewhere in like Adelaide or something. And she's like, I'm like, Julie, I can't talk. And she's like, no, you need to listen to me. I'm like, okay, I've got this book that you really want to do. I know you really want to do it, and you're probably going to have to clear your diary. I'm like, oh, God, Jesus, you know, I'm busy. He said, it's for Icebergs, but we need to shoot in the next 2, 3, 4 weeks.
Wow.
And we need 3 days a week. It needs to be a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday for 3 weeks in a row. I'm like, fuck. Wow, okay, thanks. So, so I had to – I made it happen, obviously. You know, it's like I had one chance to do it and because I had to get it printed and they wanted to be for when the opening was.
Right.
So, you know, I just had to move everything around to make it happen, which was an awesome experience.
I guess I wanted to chat about the next book that you've kind of got going, which is The Journey of Namor, which – to be honest, when you sent me the photo, there's nothing more beautiful than a well-crafted cookbook.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the most beautiful books that exist on the market. It just cooked like really nicely. Fucking hell, man. I have so many. I've got maybe like a few of Peter Gilmore's ones at home, which are just like outstanding as per usual. Amazing. He's got an eye for it.
Yeah.
And it's just so beautiful. But even just as a chef, like not just for the people that want to have it as a coffee book, you know, like just chefs to go through it and look at it
because inspiration,
like, it's so inspirational, man, because it's so hard now to go back to a cookbook that's just words, you know, like it's like that's one thing, but like having the beautiful photos, which is once again props to all you guys for being able to translate their passion into a visual craft and then express that in a beautiful design,
because
it's just so inspirational.
I mean, this is an interesting one. So I obviously pretty much from 2014 to 2020, I'll call it, archived all of Noma's work. And the idea for it, for these books, actually came from a throwaway comment from David Zilber, who was the head of fermentation.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he said. He said something like, wow, how does it feel like to have the archive of Noma's 6 years of photography, you should make books out of them. And I was like, I don't think I even commented on it. I was just passing through. I had a camera. I was probably photographing him.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sort of clicked. I went, because when I left Noma, Mexico for the last time and I knew I wouldn't see Renee for a while, we sat down before I went to the airport and we had a really good chat. And I said to him, look, it's really cool you have me here and I'm so glad that, you know, I've had this opportunity and it's really exciting. But I just wanted to ask you, like, you know, you've paid for me to fly over here. You've paid me to be here. And what's the end goal? What's the purpose? Like, what? Why? And I know, I understand why I came the first time because you needed a library. But why did I come the last 2, 3 weeks to archive everything and basically hang out and take photos of you guys? And he said, oh, I really just wanted to have a record of what I've been doing for my children, to know what work I've done. And, you know, I really love the way you shoot and, you know, you're sort of a fly on the wall, but you're not. And then that comment from David happened in Copenhagen when I was there in between, research trips or something, would fly away for a while and come back, I'd shoot. And those two comments made me think, I should really put this together in a book, in books. You know, I've got Noma Australia, I've got a beautiful archive of Noma Mexico. And I travelled around the Nordics with the research team and shot the opening of the first menu, which was seafood, of Noma 2.0. And so this project started. I must have started. I had a friend of mine do some basic designs, and then another friend of mine, Andrew Hoyne, has an amazing design studio, and he's a crazy into food. And I asked him if he would put these together. And so it sort of evolved from that. So it was always, I had hopes that maybe it would be more than what it has become and it maybe go for sale. But because of Noma's quite complex publishing deals that are huge with Artisan, we came to an agreement that I could do these books. So obviously I'm talking to Noma the whole way through. This is what I'm thinking. What do you guys reckon? We came to the agreement that I could do the books. Absolutely no problem. But I could not sell them. Which is fine. I'm fine with it. So what these books are going to be are they're basically folios and they're going to be giveaways to my current clients and prospective clients, which I think will be pretty successful. not only do the books have, you know, the photography archive of the whole period of that journey, but they also have, say, Noma Australia has Pat Nurse's gourmet gourmet review
yeah.
of his first sitting at Noma. It has a piece from Foolscap, who designed the interiors. So a little bit of perspective on that. There's also a forward from Kylie Kwong wow. about what Noma means to her.
Yeah.
So, and then say in Noma, Mexico, I have a review from the LA Times from Jonathan Gold,
yeah,
who
wow.
unfortunately has passed away.
Yeah.
And Rocio Sanchez wrote the forward as well. So, you know, I've got some really beautiful essays as well.
Yeah.
The Nordics one has Renee wrote the forward.
Yeah, nice.
And then David Fulstrup, who designed Noma
yeah.
interiors, wrote about his design process.
Yeah.
And then I think there's an article from Vanity Fair in about the opening of Noma, which is just an amazing piece of writing that gives you the full visual idea of what went down in those opening 3 or 4 or 5 days before they opened. That was written by Lisa Rebend. Wow. So I've had this amazing help from, you know, these incredible writers and artists that allowed me to publish their words within my book. So I've always been, I've loved visuals, but I've always loved also beautiful essays that explain part of the story. Yeah. So there's some really cool articles in there that give you that imagination of what was going on. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's 3 books, nearly 600 pages. It's currently being printed in Melbourne.
Oh, wow.
And because it's such a short run, we're doing about 170, I think.
Yeah.
It's getting printed digitally. So what that basically means, it's not offset. So what it basically means is each page is basically a photographic print. It's being printed on cotton rag.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Basically the quality is just insane.
Shit.
So because I think the cutoff for offset is, to make it viable, you need to print at least 600.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm nowhere near that. So I was just like, so, you know, I'm keeping about 120. Hoyne's taking 50. I'm shipping 20 to Noma.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll end up with about 100 copies.
Wow.
So I know it's not enough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's about as far as I could extend the budget because it's really, really expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm really, really excited. I mean, I've been putting this off for like 3 years. There was no point. There was no point printing these during COVID because yeah. the idea is for me to go to my overseas clients that I have or I'm looking for, you know, new clients and hand them out. So there was no point doing that 2 years ago. So
yeah, yeah.
Now we've got it, and I've coincided it with, I've basically coincided it with the opening of Noma Kyoto.
Yeah,
which will be really great. And I'm talking to the guys at the moment, and maybe we will auction one off for the Mad Foundation, which will be really cool.
That'd be amazing.
Because it'll be, you know, I'd imagine, you know, no one's going to get them. So. Yeah. If there's one that's for auction, I hope it goes for a lot of money. And, you know, I could see it going for 10, 20 grand, you
yeah,
know, to
yeah.
some person who really wants it that has 10, 20 grand isn't that much for them.
Yeah, yeah, just chump change.
Yeah, exactly.
Chump
so,
change. For
so hopefully, I'm talking to Noma at the moment about the possibility of doing an online auction for MAD. So we'll see. Hopefully that happens. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is just, it's really is amazing because having been, you know, one of the most influential restaurants in the world, and I was talking to Kenneth about this when we were there, that when we talk about the different culinary capitals of the world, we talk about France being the bastion of knowledge, and
mm-hmm.
you know, we talked about Copenhagen being this kind of inspirational part of the culinary world, right, where it's not just doing what everyone's been doing, it's trying to take new steps in a different direction, which is inspiring a whole other world of chefs.
Mm.
And to be able to document it like you have been in a visual format and to kind of give in more inspiration to these chefs, I think is so, so important. Like, it's just, it's really, really cool. You've been in such a unique position, probably one of the, if not the most unique position for Noma, being that person that's capturing that whole journey.
Yeah.
And to be able to put that out there in these formats, which is, this is just beautiful.
Yeah.
It's hard to take my eyes off how beautiful that just that is, and I haven't even looked inside it. But,
yeah. And I think it's, you know, it is really, I think I've also been lucky enough to capture Noma in its period where it was probably the most relevant time for them. I really feel like those 6 years were where they were at their greatest power.
Yeah.
And they had their greatest influence. Not their greatest influence. I think their greatest influence was before this time, but it was most definitely probably a greatest influence on a broader level.
Yeah.
Whereas previously it would have probably been very chefy.
Yeah.
You know, like people knew of NOMA, you know, say 2010, 2011, but not every person on the street. Now they do.
Yeah.
You know, like the Bear has referenced NOMA and Richard Hart, like, you know, No Tomorrow, which is hilarious. You know, I'm sitting there going, you know, I shot all Richard Hart's new stuff when he opened his bakery in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is fantastic. Like, you know, Richard's a legend, and like he's being referenced by a, you know, a pastry chef in a Netflix series or whatever it was, or Disney Plus. So it's just funny that, you know, these people, and they've become part of popular culture.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm so blessed to know these people. And the one thing that I sort of really appreciated early on in my photographic career was when I was, after I did fashion, I sort of got into shooting editorial portraiture.
Yeah.
And I sort of came to the realization really early on that if I'm photographing somebody, there's a reason for that, and they're really talented at what they do. So to spend time with them is a real privilege. And, you know, I have that now in my everyday working life, where all my clients are really talented at what they do, and I get to draw inspiration from them, as I hope I give them something back as well. So, you know, it's just really, you know, it's not really work at the end of the day. You know, it's just every day is pretty awesome. And I think part of that is the fact that, you know, if I was a photographer that struggled to get work every day, it would be a really stressful existence. Like really, really stressful. But I don't have that problem. So I almost have the opposite problem where there's too much work. So I can almost pick and choose, which is just so, so lucky.
Yeah.
You know, and people say, oh, it's not luck or it is. But, you know, there is an element of luck to what you do. You know, one thing sets off a chain reaction that snowballs and snowballs. And yes, at that first point, luck plays a part with you getting that first job. Mm-hmm. But then you have to perform and perform and perform and perform and deliver time and time and time again.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen without an element of luck somewhere along the line.
Yeah.
You know, and I sort of go, if I trace my journey back to where I am today, it probably starts with me heading down the highway to a little restaurant in Bowral called Biota, where a dude by the name of James Viles was opening some crazy restaurant and was hoping to do some really cool stuff. And I went down to photograph him for maybe he called me, and I met him in Sydney, and he asked me to go down and shoot with him. And I really, really thought what he was doing was really cool. And we're talking probably, I don't know, probably 10, 11, 12, 13 years ago. And I said to him, look, if I'm going to give you a call at the start of the week, and I might have, say, I've got nothing on a Wednesday, I might just pop down and we'll just hang out and I'll take some photos. He was like, yeah, cool, good deal. So like, you know, so I did that for months, and just shooting with James, hanging out, would go and pick mushrooms, pick apples by the side of the road, and just archive, just something to do, just a great day.
Yeah.
And that led to, you know, he became bigger and bigger at what he was doing, got two hats, became quite recognized. We shot a book together. And I think, you know, when Tourism Australia were putting forward options to NOMA, they gave them my book for Biota, probably, I'd imagine. Yeah, I gave it to them and to give this to Renee. And that ethos was similar. And that, you know, so something that happened out of love for what I do and for what James was doing 10 years earlier creates an opportunity that you could not foresee. And you did it because you wanted to, and you did it because you loved what you were seeing, and you wanted that experience, and you enjoyed that friendship. And, you know, so not everything happens for financial gain. And I don't think in my industry, to be successful, you can't do things for money.
Yeah,
you have to do, because people can see through that anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I'm passionate about what I do. I love the restaurant industry and I love food. And, you know, here I am today in a really fortunate position where, you know, I have an archive of possibly the most influential restaurant of the last 20 years. And I'm about to, you know, be able to say I have a beautiful 600-page book that, you know, I don't know where this will take me next.
But that's the beauty of it. Yeah,
you know?
That's the beauty of it.
We have all the sort of COVID times are finished and travel is freed up again. So, you know, I'll probably jump on a plane and you know, go back to, I won't go back to my old life, which was a lot of international travel, which was incredibly tiring.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, I've got three children and wife and, you know, I can't do that anymore. That's just, you know, but I'll go and do specific things that I really want to do, which hopefully that in this book, and I'm sure it will help me get to where I want to go, and I'm excited to share it.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, I've created something that, you know, in a way, my client, we'll call him my client, Renee, said to me that he wanted to me there to archive his work for his children.
Yeah.
That's what I've done.
Really
that was
beautiful.
The idea, you know?
Yeah.
I look for, Renee has a copy of this already. I sent it to him about a year ago, but I look forward to giving him the finished product, which has changed a little bit. There's different covers and, you know, there's various packaging, but, you know, it's all brush strokes, but, you know, I hope he loves it, and I'm sure he does. I haven't seen him for a very long time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's doing his thing, and I'll probably, you know, once Kyoto's over, I'll go to Copenhagen and see my friends there and say hi to him, see what he thinks.
Yeah. It's
which would be cool.
I think it's going to be fucking incredible. It's going to be very, very exciting.
Yeah.
I just to what you were saying before, where you're talking about just it being a whole stroke of luck. You know, even just when you were saying that, I was in my head thinking it's kind of like what that struggling actor in Hollywood, you know, where it's just like, you know, however good you are, it doesn't mean that you just get everything, you know, like it's
totally.
Just opportunity, you know.
Totally.
I mean, like they say, preparation and opportunity equals success, you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
You just need a whole ass and love what you do and just not think about the money first. Just do it because you love it. Much like being a chef, especially at the beginning, you do it because you love it, because you're passionate about it. You've got some mind, some crazy dream that you want to be doing something someday that doesn't involve money, you know, and it's just all you're committed to is just bettering yourself so you can find yourself in these opportunities and having these experiences like what you've had over your huge career, you know, and it's just, it's really, 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 really cool.
Mm. And I think I get emails and calls all the time from young photographers, you know, can I come and see you? Da, da, da. Absolutely, no problem. Always reply to everybody that emails me.
Mm.
And their question always is, oh, well, how do you get a start? Or how do you, and I'm like,
just do it.
I've got no idea.
Just do it, man.
Yeah. I've got no idea. Like, honestly, if I was to start in photography now, no idea.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, as I said before, I really believe luck plays a part, but then you have to deliver.
Mm.
Because, you know, I might not be in the position I am if I missed a phone call or this or that or the other. Or, you know, like, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, you do have to perform and you have to do what you do. And I've, you know, I hopefully have created a bit of a style that people recognize. I think I have. And I feel my children, my children are on Instagram here and there and they're like, oh my God, Dad, look at this shot. Like someone's copying you. I'm like, that's cool. You know, like that's, you know, that's great. Like someone's like what I'm doing. Yeah, they've tried to copy you, but it looks crap. And, you know, I'm like, whatever. You know, so I find that quite funny.
The Lucas
like,
copycats,
yeah, yeah, like yeah. The kids spot it all the time because they're sort of like, oh, you know, they see what I do and they say, oh my God, everyone's copying you, and then well, I'll do something else.
That's
you
so
know,
funny.
It's funny, you know, because social media is pretty hilarious. You know,
it's very funny, man.
Yeah, so you know, at the end of the day, we'll see where we go with all of it. I mean, you know, I've got, you know, I'll get back. I haven't done a lot of work in LA over the years, and I think that's where I'd really like to do some work because I haven't really, you know, I've always concentrating on New York. So I think LA could be an interesting stop, and it's sort of closer as well.
Yeah.
One flight.
That'd be sick.
Yeah, so we'll see.
I guess I just wanted to finish up in closing, and I ask the same question to everybody. It's just a question that chefs will often talk about in the kitchen just as a reflection of their experiences that kind of often make them humble. And I like to translate this when it comes to photographers or farmers or, you know, journalists or chefs. But it's the question of what's the funniest or craziest time you found yourself most in the shit?
Mm.
I'm sure you've got a few. I'm sure you've got many. You know, as far as chefs go, it could just be anything as you've been reducing the jus for like 48 hours and you need it for service that night and the whole thing tips over, some bullshit like that. Or
other than, say, a technical issue.
Yeah.
You know, with it. Oh, yeah, I've got one. I was shooting a whole lot of menu for Palissa Anderson at Chat Thai a few years ago, and technical issue. And I shoot on Hasselblad, which are high-end digital medium format cameras that cost about 40, 50 grand each.
Wow.
So I'm shooting. I've always got two of them in my bag.
Right.
Because, you know, something breaks. I'm shooting to computer, so I'm tethered up, and the camera basically blows up from the heat. And I'm like, oh, shit, okay, that's not great. But I've got a spare, so no drama. I hook the spare up. So the spare is a different, slightly different camera. It's a year older.
Sure.
The connection, I didn't realize it. I hadn't got the in the bag. I always got spare cords, but the connection for this particular camera was different. So I'm like, fuck, it's not going to work. So we have a spare at the studio. I'm shooting over the other side of the bridge. So I had to basically, okay, guys, we're having a few hours off. I've got to run over the bridge, grab a camera, come back, set it all up again, and everything worked. And it's the only time that I've ever had, you know, you've got a $40,000, $50,000 camera. You're not expecting to blow up. So it's the only time I've really had been in the shit in terms of wanting to do what I wanted to do and something worked. But in terms of shooting, you know.
I know it's different to translate.
Yeah, it's different because I sort of have a theory that if you're shooting and things aren't going your way, you don't let that show. You just keep going. You make it look like you know what you're doing, and eventually the tide will turn. You know, sort of fake it till you make it, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you know, if the shots aren't going well, or you know, you're not quite on your game, you just pretend like you are.
Yeah.
And I felt that as a young photographer.
Yeah.
I always was like, just keep shooting. Like, even if you don't know what you're doing half the time.
Just
do it. And, you know.
You'll get there.
So, yeah, just keep going. So I think that's the thing. You just keep going at it till you get there. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. In most cases, for me, thank God, things are okay.
Yeah.
And I'll get something out of it. But, you know, like, I have to say that when I'm shooting and say I'm having a bad day and I'm not feeling well or I'm tired or whatever that may be, I have to remind myself that I'm here for a reason. And I'm getting paid really good money and people expect something of me. So I need to just fight through that and just basically slap myself on the back of the head and go, you know, you're here, they've hired you, you're working, just get it done. Like, stop being a little bitch and just do it.
Yeah.
You know, like, because, you know, there is a reputation that precedes me and I understand that. And I've been asked to do a job.
Yeah.
And just do it. And it doesn't happen often, you know. Sometimes, you know, if you're unwell and you can't, you know, you've had the experience, you've been in the kitchen and you're not feeling well, you know, you've got people waiting on you, you just got to get it done.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's also, you know, part of my upbringing from a immigrant Greek family. You just don't whinge, you just get it done.
Yeah, get shit done.
Get it done and you're away. So, you know, yeah, I think that's a bit of a, you know, a Greek ethnic migrant mentality. You don't whinge, you just get up and do it.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, if it wasn't for that attitude, you wouldn't be here celebrating.
And work hard, you know. Yeah, you just work hard and get it done.
Yeah.
You know, and as I said before, it's not really work for me, you know. I'm very, very lucky.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that's cheers.
About my story. Thanks for sitting down with me and having a chat. I really appreciate it.
I know it
took a long time.
Oh, man, 2 years?
Two years.
Maybe a year and a half.
So that explains my current schedule.
But it's a better time than ever.
It is. It's perfect. And I sort of looked you up when I felt I had something. Maybe it's because I had something to talk about, maybe.
Right.
You know, maybe if it was like you called me and I was like, what have I got to talk about? Not much. You know, so, you know, appreciate having you here and chatting through, you know, my last few little book projects.
It's going to be exciting. And, I hope there's going to be plenty more to come because it'd be amazing to keep catching up.
Yeah, actually, the next thing is I'm going to be doing a book on seaweed.
Oh, for Japan?
Japan. Not for Noma, Japan, but some work I did with Inoue.
With
Thomas.
That's
and Shui.
Sick.
Do you know Shui?
Oh, yeah, I think you talked about him.
So we shot this archive of pressed seaweed.
Wow.
That is extends like 50 years of seaweed from a gentleman, a marine biologist by the name of Mr. Arai.
Shit.
And we are going to archive his work and talk about his life's work.
Wow.
So when this is done,
Japan
this year, go and hang out with Shui,
who's currently
working for a seaweed company. You need to look him up and talk to him. He's incredible.
Yeah.
And Thomas as well.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's our next project. So it's going to be incredible. Hopefully it's going to be a big exhibition in Tokyo.
Yeah.
And all funds to go to one of his causes, which would be, you know, basically saving the ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
And in a strange twist of fate, a very old friend of mine, Peter Thompson, who used to be in politics, is the UN ambassador for the sea.
Shit.
So I'll talk to Peter, who's at the UN.
Yeah.
And see if we can get something major happening.
Amazing.
Which will be really cool. So that's the next project.
Done. Thank you so much for jumping on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks for your time. Absolute pleasure. Thanks for tuning into today's episode. If you'd like to listen to more episodes or check out some cool behind-the-scenes photography, then head to the new website over at rootshospitality.com.au or follow Roots Hospitality on Instagram for the latest updates. Cheers. The Roots Hospitality podcast is proudly supported by Sydney Direct Fresh Produce, the fruit and veg providore that are led by Luke Kohler, who has provided Sydney with some of the best produce for more than two decades and still smashing it out today.